Welcome to Hotel.
Well, do you guys want to know what loving your neighbor looks like? We have some neighbors that maybe about 6 months ago got some chickens, and with those chickens was a rooster, a very, very noisy, free-range rooster. And the other day I was on my way to work, and they lived a little bit just off to the right of us down on the road, and I pulled out and I was driving down the road, and there was the free-range rooster right in the middle of the road. Anyway, but I didn't run it over, so that's what that's like. Well, the title of our kind of our class here is Everything Through Prayer, Peace, Prayer, and Focus in Modern Times. And kind of our format that we're going to have is we're going to start out with prayer and praise, and then we're going to do a presentation, and it's going to be probably 30, 35 minutes or so. And then at the end of it, we're going to try something, and we'll see if it works. If it doesn't work, maybe we'll do something different, but we're going to do five interesting questions, which we'll kind of break up into groups and kind of chat through those things, and then three thought-provoking ones that we can kind of think of through the rest of the week. It's essentially going to be four sessions. This week, the 25th and the 2nd, and then it's going to be a week off where we're going to have a fellowship time, and then on the 16th, we're going to finish up, and right also of the marriage seminar, and then we'll finish up with this class also. First of all, where are we going? And this is where we are going. At the end of the 4 weeks, this is where we want to be. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I'm sure you've all seen this before, but it's kind of misunderstood. Actually, Dr. Barger Ruth has this listed on one of his top most misunderstood Bible passages out there in his book that he put out on the subject. But we hope at the end of our 4 weeks to really kind of understand what this means better, and it'll probably even be a sweeter statement to us than it is right now. And the other day I came up here and I noticed that we had a blank bulletin board over there, and I couldn't stand it. So I thought we needed to put something up on the bulletin board. So I thought we would start off by putting off where we're going to put up where we are going at the end of the 4 weeks, and we'll kind of just get there as we go along the way. So do I have a volunteer to come and put this up on the bulletin board at the very right-hand side? So, all right, so there is an excellent volunteer, my beautiful and lovely wife, who, by the way, we went and saw a concert last night. We went and saw a John Denver tribute band. And I never realized how old John Denver really was, because we walked in and we were the youngest people in the place. But anyway, it was a really fun concert. And when we get to the whatevers, we'll talk about, you know, if John Denver's really something we should be focusing on. But it was a wonderfully fun time. So we enjoyed it anyway. But so I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So that is the direction that we are going. And how we're going to get there is we're going to take a look at Philippians 4:4-13. And just a little bit of background on the book of Philippians. It was written about 61 AD, and it was written by Paul to the church in Philippi. And Philippi was actually the first church ever established in Europe, believe it or not. It's a rather positive letter. There's no "you stupid Philippians" or anything like that. He's writing really to thank them for a gift that he had given to them. And it's basically divided up into four different sections. One that Christ is life, Christ is my example, and Christ is the prize, and Christ is peace. And it's interesting that probably the most famous verses that we find here are in the section four about Christ being peace. Peace was a big deal back then, and it's a big deal today. We really struggle a lot to find peace. Actually, Paul E. Miller, in his book, The Praying Life, says that we live in such a busy time that we find it very, very difficult to pray. So, I mean, peace is a really important part as far as leading to prayer. So I'm going to go ahead and read Philippians 4, 4 through 13, for we kind of know what we're going to be focusing on. And this is from the New King James Version, because that's just the one I'm familiar with, but there's lots of other good versions, obviously. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. Let your gentleness be known to all men. The Lord is at hand. Be anxious for nothing, but everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving. Let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of a good report, if there is any virtue, if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. The things which you learned and received and heard and saw in me, these do, and the God of peace will be with you. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last your care for me has flourished again, though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in regard of need, for I've learned in whatever state I am in to be content. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So where's our context here? Just where are we at? Chapter 4 starts off talking about some conflict going on in the church between two particular women. And in conflict in churches, it's good to know it was not something... It was happening then, and it's certainly happening today. And if any of you guys have ever been involved in conflict in church, you realize how painful and distracting that it can be. Michael Hyatt, I don't know if you guys know who Michael Hyatt is. Michael Hyatt was the ex-CEO of Thomas Nelson. He's actually the one responsible for the money makeover by Dave Ramsey that we see everywhere. And he was a very successful CEO, and he went off to basically start his own consulting business where he basically helps people set up what he calls platforms, which helps get their message out. And he was talking the other day about conflict, and he said, well, he doesn't particularly think that there is more conflict going on in the church than elsewhere, but he thinks that we just have such high expectations of other people that often conflict in the church really stands out to us and is more painful to us. So Paul here, he basically, you know, points out to the conflict, and he encourages other people to come around these women, and he encourages the women themselves to kind of to work it out and get over it and basically go on to something much more exciting, and that is rejoicing. You know, Paul could have chosen lots of other things to encourage. He could have encouraged them to have a greater morality, you know, you could have, you know, done better. He could have encouraged them to have more knowledge. You should know better. If it would have been like me, I would have followed Michael Hyatt's line, and I would have said, come on, let's not have such high expectations of other people. But that's not what Paul does. Paul tells everybody to rejoice. And that's really the background that that I want us to have for this class. It's really everything that we do, we should have a background of rejoicing. And why is this? Because this is really the response that we should have for the gospel. That God has saved us from our sins. That we were on our way to eternity separated from God. And now, you know, that we are now going to be part of his family, eternal with him, glorifying and rejoicing with him in heaven. And I think so we should have this background of rejoicing in everything that we do. And I kind of ask myself, what is the best way that we can actually rejoice? What is a good example of rejoicing that we can kind of think about? What's a good kind of word picture that we can have in our mind about rejoicing? And I thought about the fascinating multi-complex man, the great warrior poet King David, who is known as the man after God's own heart. And where can we find an example from David of rejoicing that we can really grasp onto? And I thought we would go to 2 Samuel verse 6, or chapter 6. And it doesn't start off particularly well. The Ark of God is about to be brought into the temple, into Jerusalem, and it's a really kind of exciting moment, but things don't go well. They don't bring it in the right way. They put it on a cart, and they're bringing it in on a cart, and it's not supposed to be on a cart. And there's a man named Uzzah who's coming along with it, and the cart gets kind of bumped, and it looks like it might fall on the ground. He reaches out and touches it, and God strikes him dead. It's one of those things we read in Scripture and we go, that's just not right. That's just not fair. Why did God do that? But and that's exactly what David thought too. He wasn't very happy about it either. But then he went back and thought about it, and everybody should have known better, including Uzzah, that wasn't the way that God wanted his ark to be brought in. So David goes and has the ark set aside for a moment at the house of Obed-Edom, where it wonderfully blesses the house there, and then he's going to do it again. He's going to try to bring it in again, and this time things are going to go better. And I'm going to pick up on 2 Samuel chapter 6, verse 12. Now it was told King David, saying, "The Lord has blessed the house of Obed-Edom and all that belongs to him because of the ark of God." So David went and brought up the ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with gladness. And so it was, when those bearing the ark of the Lord had gone 6 paces, that he sacrificed oxen and fatted sheep. Then David danced before the Lord with all his might. And David was wearing a linen ephod. So David and all the house of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord, and shouting and with the sound of a trumpet. Now, as the ark of the Lord came into the city of David, Michal, Saul's daughter, looked through a window and saw King David leaping and whirling before the Lord, and she despised him in her heart. And so they brought the ark of the Lord and set it in its place in the midst of the tabernacle that David had erected for it. Then David offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. And when David had finished offering burnt offerings and peace offerings, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord of hosts. Then he distributed among all the people, among the whole multitude of Israel, both the women and the men, to everyone a loaf of bread, a piece of meat, and a cake of raisins. So all the people departed, everyone to his house. Then David returned to bless his household. And Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David and said, "How glorious was the king of Israel today, uncovering himself today in the eyes of the maids of his servants, as one of the base fellows shamelessly uncovers himself." So David said to Michal, "It was before the Lord who chose me instead of your father and all his house to appoint me ruler over the people of the Lord, over Israel. Therefore, I will play music before the Lord, and I will be even more undignified than this, and will be humble in my own sight." Yeah, when I've read this before, I used to always think of it I pictured David kind of half naked, just dancing kind of like he was in a mosh pit coming up the road. And I always thought, you know, maybe Michal was right. And then I was studying this a little bit more, and I said, no, that's not really what was happening. He just took off his royal robes, and he still had a linen ephod on. It's basically, I think, was the same thing everybody else would have been wearing. And they think that he would have been dancing more like, think of a Jewish wedding or a Greek wedding or something like that, more of an organized, like, contra type of dance coming up, and just really rejoicing that David had really humbled himself to dance with the people, and was doing it in a really rejoicing way, that he wasn't concerned. He was very authentic. He wasn't concerned about what other people were thinking, And but Michael was thinking, oh, that's undignified. You know, he's not keeping up appearances. So we don't want to keep up appearances. Does anybody everybody see that BBC show Keeping Up Appearances? Nobody's seen that show. Oh, Margo has. It's the funniest show. I don't know if it's out there anywhere. It's this old BBC show, and it's about the lead character is a woman named Mrs. Bucket, but she wants to pronounce her name Mrs. Bouquet, and it's all about how she just wants to be seen as being this really very uppity. I'm trying to think of elegant person, and everything goes wrong for her, and it's a very funny show, and she likes to pick on the vicar, she's always trying to impress the church vicar, and then it never seems to go right for her. But we don't want to keep up appearances, but we want to have a genuine, authentic rejoicing, and I think King David gives us a wonderful example of how to do that. And then Paul goes on to say, let your gentleness be known. And the word for gentleness here is epikeios. And it really is a very complicated word. It can mean patience, softness, modesty, forbearance. So we really want to just be rejoicing out there. We really want to be rejoicing to God, but we want to do it in a way that's kind of gentle or modest, or it's not really showy, but it's just really authentic. So that's really kind of what we want to do. We want to have a background of really authentic, humble rejoicing as we kind of look at what the rest of these verses are going to tell us. And I forgot to have somebody come up and put at the very beginning, our very first starting point is rejoicing. So Margo, if you could come up and put at the very other side of the bulletin board our starting point, and that is rejoicing. And then we're going to go on here. We're going to go on to where Paul tells us to be anxious for nothing. And we're going to camp out here for quite a while, because being anxious and worrying is something we as a people are really zoned in on. We're really good at worrying. We're really good at being anxious. And besides God telling us we shouldn't be anxious, what are some of the other reasons that maybe we shouldn't focus so much on worry and anxiety? Well, Prevention Magazine tells us these are some of the effects of anxiety. One, it makes you exhausted. Two, it affects your libido. Three, it can cause you to gain weight. Four, it can affect your actual skin. Five, it can even cause you to lose your hair. Six, it can cause your back to ache. I don't know if you've ever been worried so much that your back aches. That's happened to me. And seven, it can even affect your digestion. And I can tell you from personal experience how it can affect your digestion. I remember we moved up here from Albuquerque, and we got a little townhouse in Kirkland, and I got a job, and that job was not particularly going very well, at least in my mind. And I was kind of kicking myself that I kind of made some not very bright decisions for me and my family. And we were out one day in Redmond having pizza. And I love pizza. And I had a piece of pizza on my plate, and I maybe could choke down about half of it. And the only reason I think I did that was just to show that I was okay. I was so tied up with anxiety and worry that I couldn't even eat. So I don't know if any of you guys have ever been there, but it can really affect us. I don't know if some of you guys know Tori, our daughter Tori, she just got done working at Providence Hospital. Over there in Everett before she heads off to the University of Washington here. And she ended up working in a very interesting unit. She ended up working in a unit called the transitional unit. And I didn't know this. Apparently, if you end up at the emergency room at the hospital and you have some maybe mental issues or something like that, for lack of a better word, they won't necessarily just put you back out on the street. They want to make sure that you're going to go somewhere where you're going to be okay. So they'll put you in the transitional unit till they can find some place to house you. And so that's where Tori ended up, and she ended up being the nurse for a lot of these people. And I asked her, well, do these people have a lot of anxiety issues? And she says, yes, they definitely have a lot of anxiety issues. They have a real hard time just waiting for something to happen. Let's say you go and, okay, I'll get you some apple juice, but first you have to take your medicine. They have a real hard time, waiting and through that, that being patient, that thinking that that next thing is actually going to happen, they get very worried that that next thing is not going to happen. And so, you know, anxiety disorder or something apparently affects up to 40 million Americans. And this can lead to trouble sleeping, concentrating, a sense of danger or doom, shortness of breath, chest pain. It can have some really negative effects. It's probably, as far as biblical counseling, this is probably something that's not new to you guys at all. You've probably heard a lot about this. There's even one study out there that says worry or anxiety leading to stress can cause up to $300 billion worldwide in lost revenue. I don't know where in the world they got that number, but even if 90% of it's wrong, it's $30 billion, that's still a lot of negative effects that worry and anxiety has on us. I don't know if any of you guys know who Dale Carnegie is. Dale Carnegie wrote the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. When he wrote it, he thought it would sell about 30,000 copies. It sold 15 million copies. Actually, it's even mentioned in The Hiding Place. Corrie Ten Boom, they read How to Win Friends and Influence People in The Hiding Place, and actually Corrie Ten Boom uses some of the techniques that Dale Carnegie taught in dealing with some of the German authorities as she went through her nightmare through the concentration camp system. But he wrote a follow-up book to that shortly after World War II called How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. And he wrote it because he noticed that a lot of his businessmen that he was working with had a big problem with worry and anxiety. Well, worry and anxiety and a constant nagging fear obviously are not unknown or surprising concepts to God. We go to Matthew 6, verses 25 through 34. And this is part of a collection of sayings that we all well know as the Sermon on the Mount. But we'll pick up on verse 25 here. Therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air, for they neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns. Yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? Which of you, by worrying, can add one cubit to his stature? We also can find in verse in John 14:27, let your heart not be troubled, neither let it be afraid. In Colossians 3:15, let the peace of God rule in your hearts. In fact, Jesus' number one negative command is not do not commit adultery. It's not do not follow idols. It's not do not be greedy. It's do not fear. And I would guess that the reason that is true is because Jesus knows what we're about and knows that a lot of us are going to struggle here. It's actually really interesting. I don't know if any of you know who Todd Friel is. Todd Friel actually got his start from The Way of the Master, which they're doing downstairs. I think he was a comedian before that, but then he hooked up with them and he did a show called Wretched Radio that went on its own afterwards. But he just released a book, and this book is going all through like Jesus' Last Supper, and it's all about how Jesus, despite the fact that Jesus is going to go to the most horrific event of all time, the crucifixion, he is spending his time encouraging his disciples not to fear. And really, that's what the book is about. Actually, R.C. Sproul, probably one of the most prominent theologians in America today, says that worrying is the number one commandment that he breaks. So we know that God tells us not to worry. And we know that even the secular sources say that it's a problem. So how do we solve our worry problem? Well, one thing we could do is we could get a calendar. Like this one that I found at Half Price Books as I wandered over there at lunch one day. And in the month of August, we are to be less afraid of life. So we could get a calendar like that. And this is a calendar filled up of internet sayings. In January, we're supposed to take time and do things that make us happy. In October, we're supposed to adopt a dog. In September, we're supposed to get more sleep. In November, fix broken things. March, spend more time face-to-face, all good stuff. In August, we can be less afraid. So to solve our worry problem, we could go get a calendar. Or what does actually Dale Carnegie tell us we should actually do? And he really actually has some pretty good advice. And I think you probably even go get this book at the local library. So he tells us that we should live in what are called day-tight compartments. You know, let's not worry too much about the past, let's not worry too much about the future, but let's focus on the now. Also, keep a good sense of humor. When we have a good sense of humor, that kind of keeps us perspective, and also lets us, what is humor? Humor is kind of a shared joke among ourselves, so it kind of connects us to other people. We should keep busy. Yeah, that's when we really worry, isn't it? When we don't have much going on, and we're just kind of going over in our minds all the bad things that are happening. Right before we go to sleep, we're thinking about all the things that we need to worry about. We need to know what's really true. We need to keep things in perspective. You know, what really is the worst case scenario? You know, what is really true about what's going on here? We also need to do our best. We need to count our blessings. That's a good thing. And also, we need to focus more on others. So these are the things that Dale Carnegie says that we should do. And these are probably even things that are surprising to you. I don't know if any of you remember much about farmers insurance, or you've listened to the radio, and farmers used to have these commercials, and they used to talk about Farmers University. And I've actually been to Farmers University when I worked for Farmers. And, you know, it's a building where they teach people about insurance, but it does have one very interesting room that I thought was fascinating. You walk into a room and it's completely covered with dry erase boards. And so what they do is they come in and basically say, you know, throw out an idea of how to solve a problem. Maybe how do we sell more insurance or something like that. And everybody will go around all over the room and they'll write down all the ideas, even the craziest ideas that they have. And they'll end up, then they'll stop at that. And then they'll go, now let's get rid of all the real wild ones. And let's get all of this, just come down the ones that we think will really work. And I bet if we did that with worry and anxiety, we kind of come up with a list fairly similar of what Dale Carnegie said here. So I think a lot of times we know sort of things that we should do to kind of alleviate anxiety, but oftentimes we have trouble actually doing them. Now let's talk a little bit about how God says we should attack this problem. First of all, let's remember that in Matthew 6:25, just before God says don't worry, he said something about being perfect. Isn't that what the Sermon on the Mount is? It's a list of really of teachings or instructions that Jesus has for us. And what is a list of teachings or instructions that God has for us? Well, it's essentially God's law. And so what does the law of God do for us? Well, the law of God essentially does three things for us. One, it shows us the heart of God. Two, it shows us how to live peaceful and godly lives. And three, the law of God really convicts us of our sins. So this third aspect of the law of God, it shows us, you know, we know how we should live, we know what we should do, but then we don't end up actually doing it. And so two results come out of that. One, we either kind of shove it aside and we kind of become legalistic and hypocrites and everything. People like to make fun of the church and all that. Or we end up broken at the feet of Jesus. So we end up broken at the feet of Jesus. So this is God's very first way of solving our worry and anxiety problem. Is when we come to the point of realizing that there's lots of good things we should do, and we should do them. We should try to do the things like Dale Carnegie talks about. We should keep things in perspective. But then sometimes we don't do them. We start kind of kicking ourselves. And we have to realize that ultimately that the only way that we're going to solve our problems, the only way that we're going to really work together and not have conflict in the church, the only way that we're not going to worry too much is if we end up broken at the feet of Jesus. And you notice there's a kind of a certain position that this person is in. It's kind of a universal, kind of very humble position of prayer. And that's really where we're going to go next week. Next week, we're going to spend the whole week really talking about, you know, what Paul talks about when he talks about prayer, that everything through prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, that the peace of God, we'll get the peace of God that surpasses all understanding. But our starting point needs to be that we realize that it really is Jesus who's going to be doing this for us. And we need to be broken at his feet. And I wanted to also go on and give you one more piece of encouragement. You know, because I don't want to just leave everybody there. Oh, we can't do it. We need to be broken to the foot of Jesus. That I'm really to encourage you that God is with us and God really cares about us. And I'm going to read Psalms 139, verses 13 through 16. It's kind of an encouragement that we can carry with each other throughout the week. And picking up on verse 13. For you formed my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. I think those are just really exciting words for me. I just love that every time I read that. God made me wonderfully and fearfully. That just is such an encouraging verse to me. Marvelous are your works that my soul knows very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret. There's nothing about us that God doesn't know. And that's that we are completely exposed to God, and God still, he still loves us. We were skillfully wrought in the lowest part of the earth, that he made us skillfully and wonderfully. And your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed, and in your book they were all written. The days fashioned for me, yet when there were none of them. So just kind of a last little bit of encouragement as we go about our next week.